You're listening to The Takeaway in English, right?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
The Queen's English, or is it Southern English, or...?
Well, it is certainly English in the sense that we share the same dictionary, if not always the same vocabulary in the English-speaking world. Here's a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, an American English speaker, who said this back in the 1800s. We infer the spirit of the nation in great measure from the language. What does language say about national spirit, individual cultures, even about the way we view the world in terms of our brain?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it probably reflects a lot the way that we construct sentences and express ourselves.
Well, back in the 1800s, and really from all of the time of the Enlightenment, intellectuals were talking about comparing languages because they usually spoke like 3, 4, or 5 of them.
Yeah.
The French believed French was clearest.
Still do.
Germans believed German was the most logical.
Right.
English believed the English language is most useful.
It's the language of business.
Yeah. What do the Chinese think about their language? Well, we've posed this question because it's the question that lives throughout the book, Through the Language Glass, Why the World Looks Different in Other Languages. And Guy Deutscher is the author of the book, who's named after a language, it occurs to me, joins us from Oxford. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning.
Let me just do a little experiment with you here. You heard that quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, right?
Yes.
We infer the spirit of the nation in great measure from the language. Here's what it sounds like in German using Google Translator.
Wir schließen den Geist der Nation in hohem Maße von der Sprache.
And then if you take that German and retranslate it back to English, this is what you get.
We can study the character of a people by the ideas that best expresses his tongue.
The point being there, Guy Deutscher, that language is a way of viewing the world that is at best inexact, but gives us a hugely diverse picture of what's going on in reality. Why did you decide to write this book, Through the Language Glass, Why the World Looks Different in Other Languages?
Well, it's a fascinating question that I've always been interested in, to know how the language that we speak influences the way we think and our outlook on the world. Of course, it's a hugely controversial question, but I thought the time was right now to look at it in a sort of grown-up way. And it's interesting, not just, well, I mean, first of all, for the sheer scientific academic importance, you know, our mind is perhaps the most fascinating object in the whole universe. And so it's intriguing to know how it is shaped by the culture and the language into which we were born. But
brain scientists sometimes call language the original sort of prosthetic of the mind that it uses to understand what's going on in the world. What is different about a person who grows up using a language that has, for instance, no future tense versus a language that has 3 genders, male, female, and neuter in the case of German?
Well, in the past, especially in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, there were theories that were very much in vogue, that the language that we speak actually determines what we are able to think, and that they limit our ability to understand certain things. So the claims like, if your language doesn't have a future tense, this means you have no concept of the future. But these theories turned out to be based on absolutely no evidence. There really no evidence has come to light then or later that language actively forbids us from thinking anything. But I think that the influence of language on our mind is in a different way, and that is not in what each particular language allows us to think, but actually in what it obliges us to think about. So different languages force us to specify different types of information about the world, and by continually forcing us to specify this information and think about particular aspects of our experience, they create habits of mind that go beyond language. And the genders that you mentioned is one example of that. So they're languages that force their speakers to speak about a range of inanimate objects as male or female, as essentially as he or she. Languages like Spanish or German or Russian, actually most languages of Europe. And it turns out that if your language forces you to speak about tables and bridges and cutlery or whatever from as he or she, then it shapes your associations and connotations of a range of objects, so that you assign sort of female and male, or manly or womanly associations and characteristics to such objects.
Well, let me ask you how that extends to vocabulary. There's also that theory that when one language borrows a word from another, say laissez-faire, borrowed from the French, that it's because that's a concept that hasn't really been grasped for the English speakers. They borrowed it from the French because laissez-faire is a French concept. Has that proven to be founded?
Well, I think it's certainly true that there are concepts in one language that don't have an equivalent, as a ready-made, convenient term in another language, and so you can't express them with just one word. But it's always the case that even if you don't have the concept, if you don't have laissez-faire, you can still express the idea behind it in English. It might take you a few more words. But it's not. It's a question of convenience. That's not really where the deep influence of language is, in not being able to say something and therefore not being able to think a certain thought.
Well, Guy Deutscher, before we go, I hesitate to bring this up, but the linguistics professor Chomsky at MIT posited a while ago that all languages are basically the same. They just have different sounds and different sort of outward tools. Do you buy that?
Well, I think that this Chomsky expresses what today is the dominant view amongst linguists and cognitive scientists, psychologists, that the structure of our language is essentially coded in our genes. And I don't entirely buy this. I think that this dominant view entirely underplays and underestimates the immense power of culture in general and to influence language, and of culture and language to influence the way we think and our outlook on the world.
Guy Deutscher, last question. Is azure the same color as blue?
Well, it depends on which culture you grew up in.
That's a no. Guy Deutscher is the author of Through the Language Glass, Why the World Looks Different in Other Languages. He joined us from Oxford in the UK. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you.
One thing that we're asking people to express today is their concept of America's role in the world. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is going to be speaking about this later today. But we're asking you, what is America's role now in the world? Larry emails us, we should continue to be the great entertainers of the world and make great movies about war, but we should let other people fight those wars from now on.
That's a good suggestion there, Larry.
Absolutely.
It'd be cheaper to make the movies rather than do the wars.
Yeah.
Now we do the wars and the movies.
Probably less injuries. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can go to our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.